History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by the U.S. Army, proudly honoring the men and women from every branch of our armed forces whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories out there that might just raise your eyebrows a little bit, stories that might just inspire you, and you're never going to hear them unless we take a little time to ask some questions and listen to what comes back our way. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And yeah, we sure do learn a lot in that journey. We're educated, we're entertained, and so often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Today I'm in Arroyo Grande, California, with almost 93-year-old Dick Grantham. Coming up July 11th, he's going to celebrate that birthday. He's been here for more than a half century on California's Central Coast, but originally from Southern California, born in the Bay Area in Oakland, grew up in L.A., and we're going to hear about his time in the Navy in World War II, and I've just spent the last few minutes being amazed by his handiwork all over his home that he and his wife built here in Arroyo Grande. There is oak cabinetry and all kinds of incredible woodwork. He has antique phones from 38 years with the phone company. I don't know what he doesn't have in this home, but we're going to get to know Dick Grantham today. So, Dick, let's go way back to your childhood. I guess you really never got to know your father, right?
No, I didn't know. He left us when I was 2 years old, and then my mother brought us up, and she did a wonderful job, and she was a wonderful mother.
And it was you and an older brother. And, I mean, these are the Depression times in Southern California. What do you remember about those years?
I was on my own most of the time. My mother did the best she could to raise us, and we moved around different places in Pasadena and then Altadena and so forth. And I was in the Boy Scouts there for a while and got up to Star Scout, and then we moved. And that was the end of my scouting career. But I do remember the father figure that I remember was a Deputy Sheriff Shermer. He was the head of our scout troop, and we thought the world of him, and I still do to this day.
And is that when you first got turned on to woodworking? Because there's not a room in this house that doesn't have something that you have cut and sanded and routered and beveled, and I mean, literally every room has something made out of oak. And I know I drove past Live Oak and Fair Oaks on the freeway here. Those are the exits, but I didn't expect to see this much oak in your house. When did you catch that woodworking bug?
I started woodworking about, well, I'd been in this house for some time, and what we did is we built it. I did all the electrical originally and the painting, and my wife and I together did the painting. But as far as building anything, I didn't build anything until years later. I almost retired. My wife wanted some cabinets in this one room in the house, and so we got an estimate, and the guy was going to charge me so much. We couldn't do that at that time. We couldn't afford it. So then I started asking questions and looking around, talking to people that did woodwork, and looking at furniture stores, how to build stuff, and I started in the garage. My wife was impressed with what I did, and so we started getting me power tools and different stuff, and so that I learned. And how I really got started with this was when we joined the LDS church and they talked about food storage. I hired a guy to build some cabinets in my garage for food storage, and he was doing such a lousy job and cost me so much money that I had to fire him. And here I'm stuck with a whole pile of wood and didn't know what to do with it. So started asking questions, and I started building in the garage and one room at a time and doing little things there. And over the years, I've built everything in the house. I built the deck on my house. When I was 72, my deck is 50 feet by 20 feet, kind of overhangs the slope going to the creek. And I did that by myself. There was this fascia board that's 2x8, 16 feet long. And I think I put that up by myself. I couldn't do it today. How I did it, I don't know. But I built so much stuff in this house that now I'm glad it's done, because at my age, I couldn't do this anymore. That's about it.
Well, that's not what I heard. And it's interesting that this was born out of necessity, not of interest, as you just described for us, and really is impressive in every room in the house, the craftsmanship and workmanship. I can tell your attention to detail. But I understand there's even a popular restaurant here in Arroyo Grande that you're still doing some woodwork for?
Country Kitchen. I built stuff for him in his old place. I built his whole office in his restaurant. And so when he moved over to this new location, then I started building stuff over there for him. But I'm still doing little things for him, but not as much, because I discovered one thing. Building this stuff, I'm getting old now.
But if someone wants to get a taste of some of your handiwork, they can go to Francisco's Country Kitchen here?
Yes, that's right.
Well, and you wouldn't have had a chance to make any of these masterpieces if you didn't make it through World War II, and we're going to get to your time in the Navy. But what else about your childhood stands out? Because, I mean, kids today may not understand what it was like during the Depression and some of the things that you had to do just to make life go. Do you remember any of those things that maybe stand in pretty stark contrast to today's world?
Yes. My life has been one big adventure after the other. So many things I can remember. A neighbor one time, he says that he went up at June Lake, and he had some friends up there, and so we hitchhiked up there, and we rented boats out there for the whole summer, and we lived in a tent. But that was just one minor thing. Another time, this friend of mine, he lived in South Dakota. He came from South Dakota, and he had a family back there, and he asked me, he says, "Dick, you want to go back to South Dakota with me?" And I said, "Sure, why not?" You know. And so we hitchhiked back there, and back in South Dakota, and his family that he thought he had back didn't turn out too much. And so we did little odd jobs and different things, and finally I ended up working in a carnival, Howard Amusement Company. I worked on the tilt-a-whirl. I was 15 years old at the time, and we'd set up the things, and at midnight we'd tear down to go to the next town, and then we'd load the tilt-a-whirl and the different stuff on the trucks. And the truck I had was a steak truck with a tilt-a-whirl on the back, and I had to drive that truck to the next town at 15 years old, and nobody with me. Anyway, the roads are so narrow there in South Dakota that I had to aim the truck the whole time. We'd get to the next town, we'd look for a park and crash on the lawn, and until it's time to get up, we'd set the thing back up again the next time. But I do remember one time, one place, I was walking by the stands where they have the guns and stuff shooting and the milk bottles tossed, and I was walking by and this baseball come rolling out toward it. It was about 50 feet from the stand itself. I picked it up, and I guess the people there, they backed off so that I could throw the ball back, and about 50 feet away, and I took that baseball, and I threw that baseball to those milk bottles about 50 feet away, and I hit them square. They went flying, and everybody says, "Give him a big teddy bear." I says, "I can't. I work here." That was one of my experiences. And another experience I had, went hitchhiking, and I remember I got to Boulder, Colorado. It was getting nighttime, and here I didn't have a place to sleep or anything. So I saw a policeman, and I was talking to him, and he took me to the jail. He put me in the jail for the night. Didn't take my fingerprints or picture or anything. He just put me in the jail. And the next morning, he gave me some oatmeal, sent me on my way, and that was it. So I don't have a record of being in the police department. But anyway, so my older brother had taught me to try to ride the rails. And so I got on this riding the rails, some boxcar back then. I got to Albuquerque, New Mexico. So I didn't know what to do. And I was walking down this one road past these farms. And so I went up to this one farmer and asked him if he needed some help. And he hired me, and I stayed there for about maybe 6 months. I don't know. He talked me into writing my mother a letter and stuff. But anyway, I stayed in the corn crib. And I do remember one time it snowed, and outside of the corn crib was a little cover of snow on the ground. But I was plenty warm in that corn crib. And I learned how to harness a dapple gray draft horse team and a mule team. And I'd learned how to drive them. And I became a mule skinner and a draft horse skinner. One time I had to do some plowing on a field for new alfalfa, and they put me on this Caterpillar tractor, I think it was before sunup, start plowing, and then they bring my lunch out in the middle of the day, and at dark they'd come out and get me and learn things that I never even knew before, because I'm a city guy, and I didn't know what a clevis was before. Now I know what a double tree is, and how to yoke the big horses and stuff and drive them, how to load the alfalfa on a wagon, and that's quite a job in itself, trying to steer these two draft horses in front of me and load the alfalfa at the same time. And I do remember one time I had a Sunday off. So I took one of the draft horses, and I thought I'd ride him around bareback. The only thing about those horses, you can't neck rein them. They're team horse, so you got to pull the reins one at a time to steer them. So I was riding this big draft horse. They got a kind of a smooth back, so to ride him bareback was kind of a comfortable situation. And I was riding down the street on the side of the street, and I wanted to see how fast this draft horse would go. And so I was going as fast as I could, and this car come along beside me, and they rolled his window down, and he says, "You're going 35 miles an hour." So I have ridden bareback on a draft horse going 35 miles an hour. And so anyway, I finally went back home, and the next adventure was my brother had a job in this logging camp in up northern California, and he asked me to come, and he says he's got a job for me up there. So when I got up there, my brother had left. He'd gone somewhere else. I was stuck by myself. So they put me a set in chokers. The chokers is where you put a big chain around the log and hook it to the back of a Caterpillar tractor, and they haul it to the landing. They thought that I was too young to do a dangerous job like that. They got me these boots with spikes on them so that you could walk around on the logs. But anyway, they thought that was too dangerous. So they put me as an oiler on the power shovel. They were building a logging railroad. And this logging railroad in Northern California, what the shovel would do, it, you go on and smooth it out, and the bulldozers would go ahead also. But the powder monkeys had put their dynamite in the mountains and set that off. And then one time I remember they set off 15 tons of dynamite, and we had to go to the other side of the hill when they set it off. When we come across a big rock that the shovel couldn't lift up, we'd put a pile of dynamite on top of it and put a little igniter in there, run the wire back behind one of the big tracks on this power shovel, and then we had a little hand crank and we'd set it off to blow it up. And I did that also a couple of times. This guy let me do it, and he also tried to teach me a little about running the power shovel, which I did a little bit. Winter time, they closed up because snow and stuff and sent everybody home. And the next year I got a letter asking me to come back and work for them again. But that time I was in Pasadena. I went to work as an office boy for the Singer Sewing Machine Company, and I had quite a little experience there. And after that, I worked in the parking lot, parking cars behind this drugstore. Then the next thing you know is I joined the Navy.
Well, and, you know, I've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of World War II veterans, and most of them, the most dangerous thing they ever did in their life was what they did in World War II. It kind of sounds like everything you did before you joined the Navy might have even been more dangerous than the Navy.
Yes, probably was. I guess so. But my life has been exciting, interesting. I'm an adventurer, and I've always been an adventurer. I quit school in 1941 when I first started high school because there was a war coming on. I didn't know what was going to happen. And I finally graduated from the same high school I started. I graduated in 1951. So it only took me 10 years to get through high school. I got out of the Navy, took the GED, and then went to night school and got my diploma from night school. So only took me 10 years to get through.
And what was the high school?
Mark Keppel High.
Another thing you said when you were telling us about some of those adventures, you said finally the farmer said, "You need to write your mother a letter." I don't think I was the only one listening to that thinking, what did his mother think about all this when you're 15 and 16 years old and hitchhiking and riding the rails all over the country? How did she feel about that?
I don't know, but I'll tell you one thing. My mother, something that happened later on in the Navy, lets me know that the ones what really suffer when something happens. When I was overseas, she's got a 17-year-old son in World War II, and she gets a telegram from the War Department, and all it says is, "We regret to inform you that your son has been wounded in action." So I wasn't able to write her letters. They were censored. Everything was censored. So for another year, she didn't know what was wrong with me. And I think back, and I think about how my mother must have suffered thinking about that. You know, I think about it every day, and I think about things like that. My mother went through some hell with me. I wasn't the ideal son, believe me.
On another question that came to mind as we heard about some of your adventures, do you remember where in that whole journey, where you were on December 7th, 1941, and how you found out that America had been attacked?
Well, I was 15 years old on December 7th, and I didn't join until 1943 when I was 17. That didn't really be a big moment in my life. I didn't think too much about it at the time. I think that everybody knew that something was coming along, and when it happened, it happened. And that was about it. And here, a 15-year-old kid, I didn't know what to do. I was into my adventures anyway.
So then you're 17, and you decide you want to go in the Navy. At 17, that means you had to convince your mother to sign for you, right?
Yes, I did, and that was a problem, but she did sign. I guess she felt it was a thing to do, and I told him I wanted to be a quartermaster because I wanted to be above decks, and I was interested in navigation anyway, and that was it. So I signed up and went to San Diego.
And how could you possibly imagine what that Navy adventure was going to hold? I mean, you didn't even know what a kamikaze was at that point. It would almost end your life. It's time for our first break, but there's much more to come with Richard Grantham of Arroyo Grande, California. He participated in 4 major Pacific battles during World War II, and we're going to hear about some of those, including the day that almost claimed his life in January 1945. If you'd like to see what this active nonagenarian looks like now and what he looked like as a teenage sailor, head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we're going to come right back after this.